your words will bless people and that you'll take something away from it. Because this is my story, but it's not everybody's story, but it could be part of your story as well. Okay, I've got my glasses here, but I've actually printed it out large, so I don't have to keep doing this, so hopefully I'll be able to see it. Okay, good to go. The goodness of God in my life. Right. Oh my goodness, I didn't know where to start, because there is so much, and I'm sure there's stuff I've missed out, and I've probably got too much material, so I'm going to talk extremely fast and not amplify on any of my bullet points. So, start first one. I thought... And I thought I'd do you, because... Who doesn't like an old photo? So while I'm talking in a very like way, I've got some nice photos. Now, guess who is the biggest sister in there at the bottom? So yeah, so that's me on my mum's lap on the right. And Gillian looking very coy, like butter wouldn't melt in her mouth, which was definitely not the case. On our dad's lap. And that's my favourite teddy, Bobza, who sadly was made of straw and disintegrated. And that's me at about 12, already to, you know, move into my teens. So, how I was saved. Our parents were not Christians, but of their age, they moved into a new housing estate with lots of young families. So what did you do? You kind of went to church. So we went to church, and my dad sent us to Sunday school, and we went to Sunday school all the way through. And at some point, my father also decided, he was a very honourable man, that it wasn't fair to send his children to Sunday school and not attend regularly himself. So we started going as a family, but nobody was a Christian. But when I reached 12, I did confirmation preparation, because that's what happened at that point in Sunday school. And I'm firmly convinced that my Sunday school teacher at that point was actually genuinely saved. There was just a thing about him. There was something about him. And I started to read the Bible, and I started to seek after God. And I said to God, if you're real, I want to meet you. I want to encounter you. And a very long story shortened is that that happened at my confirmation. The whole big bishop thing in the cathedral, if I'd had time, I'd have found you the picture of me in the disgusting white dress with the white doily on my head. But I went forward. I was called forward in the cathedral for the bishop to lay hands on me and say, I fill you with the Holy Spirit. And what I was. It was like someone had lit a fire in my head. It was amazing. So that is when I say I got saved. At that point, I was 12. There was then a process, because I didn't actually... The church we were in was actually not very alive, and I didn't really know any other Christians, and not have anyone to talk to. I tried joining the CU at secondary school, and it was a bit, you know, to be honest, it was quite funny. Everybody in it was from a Pentecostal church. There were only about seven of us, but they were from a Pentecostal church. So they wanted me to go to the Pentecostal church on Sunday as a new believer, and my father nearly had a heart attack. So that was never going to happen. He said, you're not going to the Pentecostal church to do this. So I carried on going to this dead Anglican church. And by the time I got to university, next slide. There we go. That's me at the top, looking all bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. By the time I got to university, I was very like, I don't know if this thing's working for me, really. So in my first term, I threw myself into university life, and I made lots of friends, and I joined lots of clubs. But right when I first got there, I put my name down for the Christian Union, because I did still consider myself to be a Christian, but I didn't go along. And then about... 4 or 5 weeks into the term, there was a knock on my door one night. I opened it, and some of you have heard this story before, but I just will be forever grateful for this guy's faithfulness. And this extremely unprepossessing young man stood there in kind of dowdy clothes and Jesus sandals and a hangdog look, and he said, I've come from the Christian Union to take you. And I was like, I don't think so. But I was a very well brought up girl, so I said, oh, thank you so much, I'm going out with my friends tonight. His name was Jack. And then the next week I had plans, knock on my door. I wasn't sensitised to by this point. Opened the door, and there he was again. I've come to take you to the Christian Union. I was like, oh, no. I'm terribly sorry, but week three. I opened the door, there he was. And I thought, oh, what have I got to lose? I'll go once, I'll smile, and I'll, you know, that's it. That was it. I reconnected with God massively, and I then went to the Christian Union and I helped run it and I did all kinds of things. So I would say my journey to full salvation was two-part. You know, it was a learning thing throughout my teens. And I guess that's true of many people because you change as a person in your teens, don't you? So you adapt. So and university was amazing because the Christian Union was really full on. It was in an area in Surrey where lots of the new house churches with Gerald Coates and all those kind of people were working, and we used to have them speak. So there was loads of challenge, loads of encouragement, and also lots of encouragement to step out. I got baptised in the Spirit, started speaking in tongues, which I'd never heard of before then. I joined a group that went to support sick people in hospital. I thought that sounds... I was very shy. I know people find this hard to believe. I was very shy, extremely shy. I couldn't say boo to a goose. I'd been to an all-girls school. But I thought, well, I'll stand in the back row while we sing hymns on the wards of the hospital, only to discover to my horror that people actually took turns to give their testimony and challenge and witness. And I thought, oh, that's okay. They're never going to ask me because I'm like 5 foot nothing and very shy. And then on about my fourth week, they said, Judith, would you like to... And I was like, so, and the thing I found out that time that has stayed with me ever since is you open your mouth and God will fill it. And that's carried me everywhere to where I am today, because he just gave me this ability to speak that I didn't have. So that was my childhood. That's the how I was saved. Andy sent us a list of questions, by the way, so this is how I was saved. Yeah, faster, he said. Key scriptures. There isn't a slide for this. Key scriptures in my life were... I'm not actually going to read all of these, but throughout this period in my childhood were Psalm 139, the amazing fact that God knows me. He really knows me. That just blew my mind away. The biggest one when I became a Christian was John 8, verse 31. If you obey my teaching, you are really my disciple. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, I must admit, for about 20 years in my life, I majored on that you will know the truth, the promise, and didn't actually notice the bit about obedience and consistent discipleship. That kind of dropped into my head a bit later on. But that's amazing. If you consistently follow Jesus, he will come through. Matthew 6, verse 20 and 5 and 30 to 34, seek first his kingdom and everything else will be added. They were the kind of... That was the verse that kind of carried me through my young adult years, when you're making arrangements. Where am I going to work? Where am I going to live? What am I going to do? Seek first his kingdom and all that will follow. 1 John 4, verse 18, love casts out fear. If we truly understand and accept God's immense love for us in the Psalm 139, we will trust him. If we trust him, what do we have to fear? There's nothing to fear. And that became more meaningful once I became a mum myself. All of us who are parents know that we would do anything for our children. Of course we wouldn't let anything terrible happen to them if we possibly could. But sometimes we do. We have to let them make their own mistakes, I know. But, you know, I just really understood how much God loved me. And Malachi 3 verse 10 came in very early, again, in my young adult life, which is the bit about giving. Test me in this. Give to me and see what I will do for you. See my provision for you. So I realised that giving was the door to accessing God's provision for my life. And that has been very important throughout my whole adult life. And my most recent verse is Proverbs 3, verse 5, which has been all of this year. Do not lean on your own understanding. Why would you do that when you have God's wisdom? But we do, don't we? I do that. Some key times of his goodness to me. These are the general ones. I've got a couple of examples. Amazing around the time of meeting Andy at university, getting engaged, and subsequently getting married. Andy was called to the mission field for a year and we were apart for a year. That seemed like a really bad idea, but it was definitely God's idea and it was great. There we go. It's a bit faded. We couldn't afford a professional photographer, and one of the things we've discovered now after 42 years is that the obviously the colours don't set, so a lot of our wedding photos are somewhat faded, you see. 1982. And that was, I was still very shy, as Andy would say, that was my Peter Pan collar phase. I used to, you know, be all wrapped up with nice high collars and things. So, yes, well, that's us. So when Andy came back from the mission field, neither of us had a job and we had nowhere to live. And this was in July, and we'd reset our wedding, which we'd postponed for the mission thing, to September, this week coming, by the way. Again, my dad was like, how can you get married? You've got nowhere to live. You haven't got any jobs. Two graduates with no work. And within a space of 6 weeks, I got a job. I went for a job interview as a social worker, which wasn't something I actually knew I wanted to do. My degree was in history, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I went for an interview at the job, and right at the end of the interview, when they offered me the job, they said, will you be taking up the offer of housing for key workers? I'm like, yes. I had no idea. So there was a flat in the high-rise blocks in Grays allocated to me. So with 6 weeks to go, we had one job and somewhere to live. Andy came back about 3 weeks before the wedding. We got stuck in on the house, which in the flat was in a terrible state. And Dad and Mum did. They were great. They rolled their sleeves up. And we got married. And God just provided. He then provided, because Andy was unemployed. He couldn't get a job. God had led us to the wrong side of London for the thing he wanted to do, which was all based in like Kingston and Oxford and things like that. So he could not get a job. But that was another thing God did throughout our married life together. Every time we prayed for a job, a suitable job came up. Every time we prayed for a suitable salary to cover bills, I think Andy mentioned this the other week to people, it did, exactly. When he lost his job some years later, we prayed again, and we needed exact timing of a new job offer to fit in with other things. It was quite complicated, and that happened as well. So, and throughout this, in work, we both ended up with careers that were incredibly fulfilling and challenging, but also flexible, and left us both time for church commitments. So that was all God. That was amazing. Some of you know that after we had David, we then had a 3-year experience of infertility, which was very tough. Very tough. And then a completely unexpected and unplanned journey into adoption, giving us a wonderful daughter who was so meant to be ours. Then I ended up with a job in adoption. Oh yeah, there we are. This was only about 18 months after we adopted her, I think. I'd taken on Upminster Station. Don't ask me why we had a photo taken on Upminster Station. I think we were on the way to Southend Air Show and we must have just asked someone to take a picture. But there we are. So that's us as a young family. And I ended up with a job in adoption, which became my passion and a job that I absolutely loved. So I didn't know that kind of work would fulfil the desire of my heart, but it did, because God knew. God carried us through the everyday family crises. I think one of the challenges when people walk into the church is that we all look like we've got it sorted. And we all look happy and secure. But we only look like that because of God. We did have some pretty gruesome things happen to us. And people who've been around a long time will know that. But God always held us. Always held us. It's amazing. So even we look back and go, oh, that was the year that happened. However, did we manage to also do something else as well? Because God is amazing. He carries you. The other general thing I've learned is timing. God's timing is amazing. In fact, for me, it's almost always I discern his blessing in the timing. It could only be God because of how it fitted, how it worked, when it happened. His timing is never wrong. Often you only realise with hindsight why something happened when it did, like Sonny and his puncture. But once you've been round that loop a few times, when you're stuck in the middle of it and nothing's happening and you're thinking, why is nothing happening? It builds your faith to know it'll be okay because God's timing's always perfect. Basically, God gave us direction, discernment and wisdom way beyond whatever Andy and I could put in, way beyond. So we give him glory for that. And I honestly say I've hardly ever had a big word. I just get nudges, little nudges in the right direction. Specific moments of God's intervention. Well, a tiny one, but there were so many tiny ones. I remember I used to try and walk the children's school when I could. It's good for them. I was walking back from school one day with Charlotte, and school was a good mile and a half away. And we'd only just set out from the school, and she kind of collapsed on the pavement with terrible stomach pains and said, I can't walk home, Mum, I can't walk home. And I'm thinking, what do I do? Now, I should say that the other thing God did was lead us to buy a house, our first house, because it was at a discount on a fairly rough, not super rough, but fairly rough council estate off Hathaway Road in Grays, for those of you who know it. So I'm walking home with Charlotte on the pavement thinking, what am I going to do? We had a neighbour next door but one who was not a neighbour I normally sought out attention from. She would stand in the garden and scream four-letter abuse at her children and throw things, and she was clearly a bit rough. So, and I dealt with that enough in my day job, so I was like, yeah. She pulled up in a car and said, look like you're having trouble, do you want a lift? And I was like, you know, she was an angel. Clearly she was an angel and I hadn't noticed. So we got in her car and she took us home and I said, thank you so much for that. And she said, it's all right. And never spoke to me again. We lived there 8 years. We lived there 8 years, and I used to greet her after that, and she'd just go, yeah. It was quite funny. It was hilarious. So there was that one. A much, much, much bigger one was in her teens. There was a crisis in Charlotte's birth family, a very, very bad crisis. A death, all kinds of criminal, nasty, awful stuff. And Charlotte was 16, and she wanted to be part of it. She didn't want to be left out. She wanted to go to the funeral of this family member. And we were like, her birth family were like gangsters, definitely. How can we go to this funeral? They will annihilate us. They will spot her. She got siblings who were still with that family. And I could not tell you now how we decided to go, but we did. We just gave it to God. So we turned up at this funeral, us looking like respectable people at a funeral, suited and booted, and her too. And then there were all these people who turned up in lorries and trucks and
shell suits
and vans. And we all sat together, just like this, closer than this. And they're all yelling at each other, where's that kid that was adopted? They should have got her here. And nobody spoke to us. Nobody noticed us. It was like being cloaked in Star Trek. It was incredible experience. They talked about us constantly across us. They were sat there and there And they talked across us. And they didn't see us. And then afterwards, Charlotte wanted to look at the flowers, so we went to look at the flowers. She's standing right next to her birth grandmother, who was mouthing off something terrible. And the thing I should tell you is that Charlotte is the spitting image of her birth mother. And her grandmother standing there saying, "Why haven't they got that Charlotte here?" It was crazy. So, yeah, God cloaked us. He took us into battle and we were invisible. So I'll never forget that. 3 years ago, 3 weeks before we were due to go on holiday in our caravan, much needed holiday. That's the other thing God's blessed us with is holidays. Many times they've been really needed because of all this other stuff. And our car broke down. And we needed a car with a tow bar because we were taking our caravan to France. And we prayed about a car, and we didn't have time to look for one privately, which is what we would normally do. So we went to Toomey's main dealer, and cut another story, long story short, they don't sell cars with tow bars. They take them off because people don't buy them. So we didn't let on that we were desperate because, you know, they're salesmen, aren't they? So we were just like, oh, that's a shame. Don't suppose you've got one. Because we'd already discovered that if we bought a car without a tow bar, it was going to take 4 months for them to put one on. So that would have been there was such a waiting list. That would have been our holiday out the way. So basically, we just said, oh, I don't suppose you've got one that you haven't taken the tow bar off yet, have you? We'd already decided what car we wanted. We needed a Mondeo, which are also now not being made. So they didn't have many. And he said, oh, I don't think we have. I'll ask my colleague. If we have, it's out the back because we won't even have prepped it for sale yet. And he came back and said, yeah, we've got one. We've got, I think it's Mondeo. And we walked around the back going, yes, God, yes, God, yes, God. Our car. And we got round the back and sure enough, it had a tow bar on. And so we said, oh, yeah, well, yeah, we think we're interested. Yeah, we're interested. So basically, we bought the car. And then he said, oh, because we haven't even started prepping it yet, it's going to be about 3 weeks before you can have it. Well, we hadn't told him we had no car. Our car had broken down. So we said, oh, I wonder if you could, because it would be good if we could, you know, we were using my little tiny KA. It would be good if we could have our bigger car as soon as possible. So I'll see what I can do for you. Got it done in a week. And when we got it home, we discovered it had a top-of-the-range removable tow bar, which we'd never been able to afford before, which is just amazing. So a car. God gave us a car when we needed a car. The last example I'm going to use is our mother sadly had a stroke and ended up with a really serious brain injury and rare brain injury. So first of all, they said to us, ooh, she's going to have to go to specialist nursing care. The nearest facility that could cope with it is probably going to be the other side of London. Now, we're a very close family, and my mum lived in Grays, and we saw her 2 or 3 times a week. We knew she would not cope being that far away from us. So we said, oh, they found somewhere in Pitsy. Then they said, you won't get funding for it. Nobody ever gets funding for it. Guess what? We got funding. And then me, although I was working in Basildon, my job was normally very full on. I never got to take a lunch break and I rarely got to leave before 6:30 at night. So I'm like, how am I going to visit my mum? And it had become clear by then that she actually needed daily visits because she was so upset and confused. The government changed adoption practice, which meant that Essex had to completely reorganise its service. And while we were going through this muddle, which all the rest of my colleagues were saying was the pits, my workload decreased and I visited my mum nearly every day. And then mum died and the workload picked up again. It was just those things, amazing. What have I learned? You don't have to learn by making mistakes. That's painful and inefficient. Be teachable from others, believers, alive and dead. Read testimonies of people who are dead in the past. Ask older Christians, how do you do that? What should I do about this? learn from mistakes as well as the positives. Because, you know, Paul had a dramatic testimony. We often forget that before that, he was involved in the murder of Stephen. And I'm sure he would have done anything not to have been involved in that. So, you know, he had a testimony both ways. God used him mightily, but he didn't always get it right. Some of the damage we inflict on ourselves and others before we meet Jesus can't easily be undone in this life. So don't stumble through thinking, I'll figure it out. Jesus is always right and always good. You can trust him absolutely. Joy, peace, freedom, and fulfillment all come from following him. I've also learned he doesn't expect a lot. A bit like I learned when a mum, like, you stick your kids' pictures on the fridge even when they look nothing like what they're meant to be. If they're being disobedient and they just turn and look your way and go, sorry, you're there. You're there. You don't expect full restitution and reparation and sort it all out, and not if you're a good parent, you don't. You reach for their smallest inclination, don't you? And you turn it into something. And that's what Jesus does. It's like power steering. You give it a little tweak in his direction and he says, oh, yes, I'm with you. Off we go. One thing I wish I'd learned earlier than I did is take the Bible more literally. Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. If it seems daft or stupid, that's because I'm daft or stupid and he's God. Ask God for wisdom. Don't assume it will make sense. Take the Bible more literally. You can't know what will happen next. Often we don't do the first step because we don't know what's going to happen after that. But supposing I talk to her and then she asks me this, and then what will I do? And you know I've got to be at the dentist in half an hour. I do that all the time. I can't do this, God. What will happen next? We're never going to know what's happened next because it won't happen next if you don't do the first thing. If you pray for a person to be healed, you won't know what's going to happen until you've done it, really. And as Glenda said the other week, we can't see ahead because we're following Jesus. We're behind him. And I think he's actually protecting us from seeing what's ahead a lot of the time. Every choice and every decision you make every single day impacts on your overall course in life. Nothing is wasted. Like grains of sand in an hourglass, they all trickle through and add up in the end. His timing is perfect, so if he seems to delay, it's not time yet. My vision for the future is really simple. It's nothing grand. I actually don't know where I'm going. My vision is to follow Jesus wherever he leads me and serve my brothers and sisters as we together help to build his church and establish his kingdom on earth. I'm really passionate about his body, about us, and the more of us that are out there in our community and in the world. I know from experience this will be challenging and exciting and incredibly fulfilling, and to do my part, I feel this is what I need to do. Make time for my relationship with Jesus every day. Be obedient to everything he's already shown me. To say yes every day to his plans for me. And then act on any promptings and opportunities that arise. And be brave. There's so much to look forward to. When I look back, every aspect of my life has been challenged and reshaped and ultimately blessed by Jesus. And I often say to people, my life might look incredibly ordinary on the outside, you know, married, two kids, lived in the same area all my life. But it's been so exciting and fulfilling, thanks to the goodness of God. Yes, so I'm going to have to... I haven't got it in front of me. Turn that round. Lord, you have seen what is in my heart. This is Psalm 139, by the way, for the tape. Lord, you have seen what is in my heart. You know all about me. You know when I sit down and when I get up. You know what I'm thinking, even though you're far away. You know when I go out to work and when I come home. You know exactly how I live. Lord, even before I speak a word, you know all about it. You are all around me, behind me, and in front of me. You hold me safe in your hand. I'm amazed at how well you know me. It's more than I can understand. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for your goodness to us. Amen.
Yeah, thanks, Judith.
Would you like to see a picture of Jillian again?
Yeah, we'll put those back on. Yeah. And that 12-year-old that you married.